The chief and Jordan sent word back through the caravan that the companion should join them at the head. Making their way to the front, they were only too aware that they were the subject of intense scrutiny, just as they were only too aware that they were to be placed directly in the firing line once more.
Are you willing to undertake a reconnaissance, especially in view of what happened to you the last time?
Was the old man testing them, or giving them a way out that wouldn't lose face with the tribe? Ryan tried to judge from the look in the old man's eye, but it was still so strange to see another light in Doc's eyes that he couldn't tell.
The last time was just a piece of bad luck. For someone.
Ryan scanned the crowd that watched them, catching sight of the ever-impassive Macindo to one side of that crowd. The sec chief gave nothing away.
Aye, for you, but not for us. At least we know now that these deserted places are likely to harbor traps.
Ryan frowned. He didn't know if Jordan was deliberately ignoring his inference, or that he simply did not realize what was being said. The latter seemed likely, as the old man seemed lost in thought, continuing with his musing in a way that reminded Ryan of Doc's ability to ramble. Perhaps there was more of Doc creeping through than they dared hope.
I'm wondering if they just leave these traps when they evacuate, to foil anyone who may stumble upon their settlement, or if it be directed solely against us. But if so, how would they know that we were following on their trail?
Jordan was so deeply lost in thought that his attitude caused Thompson to look to McPhee. The medicine man shrugged. He was still wavering in his faith, and if the chief wished to defer to this stranger, he would go along with it. That didn't necessarily mean that his whole heart was in it. Let Thompson assume the full responsibility, lest there be trouble. It was a brief silence, an even briefer stumble in the wall of authority that emanated from the caravan's leading trio, but it was enough to enable Ryan to jump into the breach and seize the initiative.
Can I suggest that my people go and look over the huts by ourselves? That way none of your people will be at risk. Perhaps we can offer you some answers. If only in the way we buy the farm.
Thompson was suspicious. Why would anyone willingly walk into a trap? Thompson had no idea that the previous explosion had been attributed to his own men, even though at least half the tribe had guessed as much. The chief had become so swept up in the messianic fervor stirred by Jordan that he couldn't conceive of his own people going against the word of the stranger. McPhee, on the other hand, was determined to keep to himself and see how things panned out before committing himself. He allowed the ghost of a smile to flicker across his lips as he watched the one-eyed man carefully phrase his request and immediately understood Ryan's position. McPhee wasn't so blinded by the stranger as to see the hostility the outsiders had provoked among certain sections of the tribe, and he had his suspicions about Macindo.
That's an excellent idea. You were right about the courage shown by these warriors.
Aye, they are noble fighters indeed. Aye, Ryan Carter, you must undertake the mission as you requested.
Ryan assented and indicated to his people that they should move toward the Three Hut settlement at speed. Partly because anyone still within the cabins would know they were coming, and therefore speed was of the essence, and partly to prevent any of the Inuit stopping them or attempting to join them. Although they would, as ever, exercise caution, they knew that the real danger lay to their rear rather than in front of them. The companions spread out, making themselves harder targets to hit. There was little to no cover between the point on the trail where the caravan waited and the area taken up by the three huts. They traveled swiftly over the rock and ice, weapons to hand, even though all were sure that the cabins were deserted. There was a stillness about them that betrayed their desolation. Still, triple red and no chances taken was the only way to keep from buying the farm. They fanned out so that they approached the settlement in a semicircle, with Jack and JB at each extremity, circling around to cover the rear as much as possible. Ryan was in the middle, forging a path to the center of their target, flanked by Christy and Mildred. Jack relaxed as he rounded the outside of the triangle formed by the huts. Whatever life he could smell was stale, old scents left by those, human and animal, that had departed. All he could hear was the sound of his own breathing, slow and steady. There were no other noises from within the cluster of wood, cinder block, and metal that comprised the three huts. Yet even though he relaxed, he still kept his .357 Magnum Colt Python tight in his grasp. His instincts had never led him astray before, but it would take only one, all too rare occasion, to wipe him from the face of the earth. From a distance, as the Inuit watched them, it seemed to Thompson that they were taking an inordinate amount of time. Doubts about their abilities, given such apparent overcaution, plagued him.
place seems empty. But I guess they have to be that careful, don't they?
Jordan eyed him with a sly grin.
Do not worry yourself, my friend. They are true warriors, and they know whatever the situation, the one without caution is the one who doesn't come back. Trust in them.
Easier said than done, thought the medicine man, as he watched his chief nod stupidly to the stranger. Although he believed that Jordan had come to guide them, sent by the Almighty, there was still that element of skepticism and caution in his mind that warned him to not follow slavishly. The man may have been sent by the Lord, but that didn't mean that he knew shit about fighting in this world. Unaware of the exchanges that continued to their rear, Ryan's companions had fanned out and surrounded the three huts. The absolute still of the settlement told them that it was deserted. From their points around the settlement, they could clearly see one another. Indeed, they could have clearly been seen from inside the cabins, and would surely have been attacked by now if the settlement was populated. And Ryan indicated that they close in. In a tightening circle, they moved toward the cabins. The cinder block hut to one side was open to the elements, and had obviously been used to house dogs. The inside was clearly visible, the pen door thrust wide, and the smell from within, confirmation of its purpose. That was no longer a concern. There were just the two cabins, the windows of which were intact, and blankly staring out at them. The doors were closed. As with most of the cabins they had seen on this trek, the design was simple and functional. Two windows for light and a view of the outside, a solid wooden door, the remainder built firm, with no other ingress or egress, designed solely to combat the elements and reduce the heat loss from within. It meant that whoever may be within was trapped, yet at the same time secure, as there were only three spots to defend from attack. The only way to tackle these cabins was full on. Ryan, Mildred, and Christy took one, Jack and JB the other. One member of the party attacked the door, while the others flanked them, ready to provide cover if necessary. It was over in a second. The two men taking the entrance to each hut tried the doors. They were unlocked, opening outward. Pulled to their fullest extent, they allowed a wide-angled view of the interior, while also framing their target in the portal. Ryan and Jack both went low as they pulled at the doors, making themselves as small as possible, and scanning for any enemy within. There was none. As their instincts had told them, the cabins were long since deserted. JB joined Jack in his cabin, shouldering the M4000 he had been ready to use in this instance. A spreading load of barbed metal flechettes from the weapon would have been the simplest and most effective one-shot within such an enclosed space.
Looks like they left in a hurry, but of their own accord.
Right.
Jack's eyes roamed the interior. There were three beds in the cabin, each covered in filthy blankets and furs. A small table stood near the stove, and on it were plates covered in scraps of food that had congealed. The floor was scattered with clothes and stray shells, as though spilled from a pack. It looked as though the contents had been packed in a hurry, but there was no sign of destruction or forced entry, as there had been in the Smallvilles they had seen along the trail. Jack leaned over the plates and sniffed them, then tentatively felt the stove. Frowning, he opened the door to the grate and sifted the ashes gathered therein.
Maybe 20 hours since when? Maybe less.
So where would they go in such a hurry?
Or why?
Both men suspected the answer. They left the cabin and walked over to its adjacent companion, where Ryan, Mildred, and Christy were inside. This cabin was the same as its partner. It had been stripped of most things, and seemingly in a hurry. There were two beds here, and a larger table that had a battered and rusting tin chest beneath it. As Jack and JB entered, Ryan had just pulled the chest from beneath the table and was opening it.
Looks like they shot through in a panic.
The beds were covered in disheveled furs, with a couple of empty plates lying on top. There were a few clothes also heaped on the bed, as though discarded at the last moment, and a wooden box that had a stenciled reference on the side. JB recognized it immediately as a pre-dark case that would have contained ammo for a Heckler & Koch MP5, the boxes of ammo cased in the wooden container for easy transport. At a guess, there had been little left in the case. Whoever had fled the cabin had decided it would be easier to carry the ammo another way. The table had been cleared before the inhabitants left, and Ryan hefted the tin box onto the rough scarred top. It was lighter than he had expected, and he found that it was more than half empty. There were old photographs and papers jammed together in a haphazard fashion, some of which had succumbed to damp and mildew over the years, and were stuck together and unreadable. Ryan pulled out some of the photographs and passed them to Mildred. She thumbed through them, and could see that they were a mixed collection of snapshots from the 20th century. Some were old black and white photographs that had almost faded to sepia, that she could pin down as being either from the 20s or the 40s by the fashions and hairstyles. It had been a long time since she had seen such things, and it surprised her that she could still remember enough to place the period with such accuracy. Others of the snapshots were in color, and from the last 30 years of the century. These she was able to place and date with a much greater accuracy, as the fashions and hairstyles were those during her time. In some instances, she was able to identify the exact year from some seemingly inconsequential feature of the snap, a slogan on a t-shirt, a billboard in the background. She felt a tear prickle at the corner of her eye. It had been a long time, too long, since her old life had tapped her on the shoulder in such a way. It was an ache that was painful, yet at the same time pleasant. To recall those days reminded her of a part of herself that she had been forced to bury. To have that bubble to the surface was good. That it was still there at all was something of a miracle. Yet as she looked at the snapshots, there was something about them that seemed odd. The people in them didn't appear to be related in any way, and the locations seemed to be from all parts of the U.S., with no rhyme or reason to them. It was as though someone had just collected these photographs whenever they had come across them. Why? To recall a world they had never known? To satisfy their curiosity at what life had been like before the hardships they now endured? Ryan was wondering much the same thing. The papers left in the tin box told him nothing. A collection of letters to and from people that appeared unconnected, pages torn from magazines, old newsprint that crumbled to the touch, half a paperback book, and some invoices and receipts for products and services that had been obsolete for well over a century. It seemed a completely random collection, but only half. What had happened to the top layers of the chest? And did they have any relevance to the mission in which the companions were now engaged? It appeared unlikely, but this train of thought had its own reward. Scanning the walls, Ryan could see patches where some hangings had been taken down and carried away in the flight, but other things remained. Among these was a map of the area, drawn by hand. A scrawled, misspelled note along the top edge read, "Trail from Volcano to Anchorage," with a compass marking beside it.
Who the hell lived here?
Someone whose time was cut short.
Christy joined Ryan at the map.
I'd like to know how accurate this is, and how they got to draw it.
I figure whoever did it must have used the trail often, and not just to go to Anchorage and back. This takes us back past the slopes. I think they must have scaled the volcano slope to get a good look at the territory. Think about it. It's flat all around here. And if you were to risk getting far enough up, you could see the surrounding area probably all the way to the sea.
Look.
J.B. indicated a point on the map just beyond where they now stood. He had joined them to examine the map, and had been drawn to one particular spot.
Fire blast. That's gonna fuck things up.
The armorer's finger was on the part of the trail that passed Fairbanks. It indicated that the land had shifted, forming an incline that had collapsed into a valley. About 20 miles in circumference, it formed a bowl in which the Villa Fairbanks was set. They would have to approach the Ville from above, and would be a sitting target as they descended the slope, with little or no cover.
Oh, shit. This is bad, isn't it?
It's bad enough that we were coming on them on a flat plain that didn't offer cover. Now we gotta try to get down into a valley where they'll be barricaded and we'll be in the open.
Shit. They know we're coming by now.
Why, Jack?
How easy see us coming over land? 100 from here on I see us coming. Know what happened in Utterville's. Not hard guess what we want. That's why they gone. Bet they gone to Fairbanks with 20-hour start.
Dark night. That Ville's gonna be locked up tighter than a gaudy's goodies when you got no Jack.
Uh-huh. So, how are we gonna break this to Thompson and Jordan?
Carefully.
The reactions of the three men who were leading the attack were certainly instructive when Ryan and the companions rejoined them and relayed what they had found, and the conclusions they had drawn. Thompson was thrown. It was apparent that he hadn't considered that their force may be visible enough to give early warning. To him, the trappers and hunters who lived in the isolated settlements between the volcano's lower slopes and Fairbanks would be far too preoccupied with their everyday existence to notice the encroaching forces. And even if they did, they could be taken by force and eradicated. The fact that Fairbanks may now be awaiting their arrival with hostile intent was a factor that he hadn't considered, and had no contingency plans to implement. Jordan took it all in his stride.
so they will be ready for us. A sacrifice that is hard won is all the sweeter. They will die a more noble death as warriors if it is battle, and not in a half-hearted defense of an attack from the blind side.
McPhee kept his own counsel, but couldn't disguise an askance glance at the chief and the stranger that suggested he felt that one was out of his depth, the other verging on insanity. McPhee had to follow the chief. The evidence of his own senses suggested that Jordan was what he claimed to be. And yet, his seeming disregard for tactics, beyond a plan to charge head-on into a glorious war that may result in a pointless and pyrrhic victory, suggested that he didn't have too tight a grasp on reality. McPhee cast a surreptitious view around the tribe. Those who were close enough could hear what Ryan told Thompson and Jordan. To the companions, they would remain as inscrutable and unreadable as before, but to the shaman, who knew them well and was of them, it was evident that an uncertainty spread through them. They had a communication that was based on body language and the slightest of gesture. Through this, the unease felt by those closest to the chief spread through the ranks. Unease could mean vacillation at a crucial moment. The shaman was no fool. He was aware, even if Thompson and Jordan chose to ignore it, that many in the tribe were unhappy at having the strangers in the war party. Furthermore, he was certain that the trap in the last large ville had been down to Macondo. The medicine man now began to weigh options in his mind. If the sect chief was against the outsiders, then perhaps he felt a lack of confidence with the chief and the supposed voice of the Almighty. Being sect chief, he would carry the support of most of his men, and perhaps many of the other tribe members, now that this latest revelation had sent a shiver through the ranks. Perhaps it would be a good time for him to cultivate his relationship with Macondo. As a good pragmatist, McPhee was an old man who wanted to live to be a little older, whatever that may take. A few hours remained until they reached Fairbanks. As they marched, the companions became aware that they were slowly ascending the land shift. It was a very small gradient over a long distance. This could account for why it was barely visible, as the distant horizon seemed to be stretching flat out in front of them. It would also explain why the bulky outline of a ville the size of Fairbanks was lost to them. All that appeared was another group of cabins that housed trappers off to one side of the trail. Thompson sent the companions off to wreck the cabins, three this time, with two cinder block structures adjoining that had housed livestock. All five buildings were empty and showed signs of being vacated with some haste. There was little else to see, and no time in which to conduct a thorough search. This time there were eight beds in the three cabins, and a greater number of dogs, perhaps some other livestock that had been loosed or taken. Two of the beds suggested that these trappers numbered children among them, and in view of what the Inuit would probably have done to them, Ryan was relieved that they had fled.